Blog Talk Radio.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Will a strong and united America still be a force for freedom and prosperity around the world?
America has created the longest peacetime economic expansion in our history.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Good common sense and sound judgment of the American people. And their essential love of justice.
Hi, welcome to the Kudzu Vine for Sunday, October 7th. Welcome, Tim and Catherine.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Yes, well, I'm glad to have y'all on, Catherine. I want to have you on for a full hour this time. since the last time you came on, it was a truncated version, but a good show, and I think you did well, and that's why we decided to have you back.
Well, thank you very much for inviting me. I'm glad to be here.
Yes, well, I guess there's just been a kind of a busy political weekend. We had a presidential candidate visit. We had action on the Republican side of statewide politics. And we had the Georgia Federation of Democratic Women had a big meeting. Catherine, you were at that meeting down in Clayton County. Looking at the pictures, I believe that was Clayton State.
Yes, it was Clayton State. It was lovely.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful campus. I'd never really been – I'd been there only once before, and – I actually had a chance to walk around a little bit because I was there a little early, and it was a lovely event, a lovely location. We had about 110 people, and Mrs. Vandeveer, the Jane Kidd's mother and the wife of former Governor Vandeveer, was there, and she was really happy to be there. They showed a really compelling video of gathering of former first ladies of Georgia talking about their service to Georgia. It was very interesting. And then we gave away an award for the Businesswoman of the Year, which was given to Beth Pereira, who's a regional manager for the Pampered Chef and also a member of the Georgia Federation of Democratic Women. I have just recently been asked and agreed to serve as the 5th Congressional District Representative for the Georgia Federation of Democratic Women. So this is my first event. I was glad to help and be there. It was quite fun. We had a really good time and a nice spread of food afterwards, and I think everyone had a good time.
Yeah, so that was good that those more groups meeting, and that sounds like a pretty well-attended event.
I think for a Saturday afternoon in October, you know, I think I was very pleased. We had a full house. Basically, we had to pull in some chairs from the reception area. And Benson Manica from the Young Democrats did a great job of live blogging and videotaping it. The videos will be up at some point. I'm not sure exactly what the plan is with that, but I think he did a good job. It's all posted at Blog for Democracy. I think he did a great job. It was nice to have him there.
Yes, and that kind of sometimes when you can't go to an event, it's good, you know, seeing the pictures, hearing a little bit of report, and then
yeah.
At times video is even very valuable. That's another good event. And I guess there's just, like I said, there's all kind of events. I know later in the show we may have somebody that was at several of the Richardson events.
I was at one of them.
You were at one of them. So
I was at the IBEW.
Yes, I think we'll save that for later.
Okay.
But segueing over to some other things, we did have a little something happen on one of our U.S. Senate candidates had a chance to do something that, you know, to kind of put himself in a positive light with the drought going on, even though we got some rain. It rained all day at the beach in south east Georgia earlier this week, but still a rain deficit. And Stone Mountain Park, they were going to have snow falling, which I forgot the number of gallons it was going to use per day. But it was in the, I believe, the hundreds of thousands. Do y'all know the exact figure?
I don't remember the number, but it was something like, you know, a month's worth of water a day.
Yes.
Or something. It was ridiculous.
For the park, I guess. I mean, a month's worth of, like, one household. Or it was an enormous amount. So Vernon Jones, Democratic Senate candidate, who is the current CEO of DeKalb County, got the chance to, you know, veto it, if you will, or put a stop to it. And it kind of made him look like a bit of a leader, and so it put him in a good light. And so I thought that was interesting that he got some positive press, and something that's going to be statewide. You know, got a little bit of statewide coverage, not just Atlanta or DeKalb.
Well, he even got a few words of encouragement from, of all people, Phil Kent, about that this morning on the Georgia game. There were even, and Phil Kent doesn't have many kind words for Democrats, so it was a good weekend for Mr. Jones.
Yeah.
Well, I neglected to mention that we did have Dale Cardwell and Rand Knight at the Georgia Federation meeting yesterday, and Mr. Jones was invited, but he did not attend. So we had a little Q&A with them, too. I'm sorry, I forgot.
Yes, well, kind of tell me, how were they received at the event?
I thought they were received very well. I've seen them both on a number of occasions over the last couple of months, you know, both in presenting to a crowd as well as talking to them individually. And I think we all felt, and, you know, talking about it afterwards, that their messages are getting clearer and more passionate. They were, it was short, you know, only a few minutes, and most of the questions were revolved around immigration and a little bit about the environment. But it was good. I think that they were very positive. There wasn't any, you know, infighting or anything like that. I think everybody got a pretty good idea of what they would be like as in leadership positions. So I thought it was good and very friendly, which I appreciated.
That is good.
Yeah.
We just had a caller call in. Who do we have joining us?
This is Juliana Laurie.
Oh, okay, Juliana. You're going to call in and tell us about the Richardson event. You weren't by chance at the Georgia Federation of Women event as well.
No, unfortunately, I wasn't. I actually went up to Cherokee County and attended the Cherokee County Dems breakfast instead, and that was all just a little too much to do in one day.
It certainly is. If you look at the agenda some weeks, you could just, you know, do nothing but drive from political event to political event, but you have to rerun for statewide office or working on a campaign to sometimes subject yourself to all that.
Well, you know, that's part of learning your state, especially for our folks who, you know, may have a very, you know, one-town-centric vision of the state. I think they get their eyes opened when they're out there going from top to bottom of such a large state. Most people probably don't even realize how large it is till they have to do that and then go crisscross it in the same day.
Yes. Well, Julie,
they're all probably wishing they had a plane.
Well, Juliana, you came on to join us because you had been to, I believe, more than one of the Richardson events. He was in town. I know he was at Georgia Tech speaking, the Varsity, and IBEW were at least three of the stops. Tell us
in addition to the Black Caucus event.
And that was not at Georgia Tech, correct?
No, he was at their luncheon. He was the keynote speaker at the luncheon. And so he spoke to roughly 300 state, you know, black lawmakers and union leaders as well. I was not at that luncheon. Some of us have to work full-time, and there's no 501K or a 401K in politics. So,
yeah.
And I wasn't able to catch the Varsity event either, but I heard there's a little bit of a video of that Shelby did. It was kind of an odd time to be at the Varsity. 4 o'clock is kind of an off time. But as I understand it, hot dogs and chili dogs were enjoyed by all. So,
yeah. So,
And then I went on to the Globe event, which was his fundraiser. And that was roughly 50 people, a nice crowd, some folks I knew, some folks I didn't know. Of course, Sam Zamarripa and Buddy Darden are the co-chairs of his campaign here in Georgia, and he has some significant support with Laura Turner Seidel and her husband Rutherford Seidel. They gave his first big fundraiser here in Georgia back in March.
Yes, and you said the Globe. What is that venue?
The Globe is a tapas bar over by the Georgia Tech Convention Center, 5th Street,
okay.
And Spring, you know, in that new little area.
Okay.
Over there, and we were sort of in the back room there, which was quite lovely, and he spoke for 10 minutes or so, mostly centered around the fundraising aspects of the job, as well as his policy platform positions. It was a very different conversation than the one we had down at the IBW, who spoke much longer there, and it was a larger crowd as well.
Yes, and my impression was the Globe event would have been people that are definitely supporting him, whereas the IBW was people maybe kind of saying, hey, I'll come out to that. It's free or inexpensive, and I can learn more about him. Is that the sense you got?
Correct. I think a fair number of the people, and Catherine can chime in here, were there to support the Georgia Association of Democratic Party Chairs, the GADCC, because that's who the small money that they asked, $25, and it was a voluntary donation, that's who the money was going to, not, in fact, the Richardson campaign. So a lot of people came to come out to support the GADCC as well as see a presidential candidate. Not that often. We don't see that many presidential candidates who come here in support of others. You know, mostly
yeah.
They're supporting themselves. And so this was kind of, it was an interesting event. I mean, I think it was their first one, right? This was kind of like a, you know.
Yeah, I think it was like a kickoff to a, they're hoping to do a series of them. And to be, you know, to be fair, we should also, you know, let everybody know that Labor was very helpful in that event as well.
Absolutely, yeah.
They were, you know, they, of course, we had it at the IBEW, which has been, you know, freshly painted and it looks great. There were quite a few Labor folks there as well, and a lot of young Democrats.
Absolutely,
always
yeah.
Nice to see the young Democrats.
Yes.
I believe they spruced up the background area because I saw the pictures, I mean, the painting or mural or what have you, that if they've painted behind where the speakers are, just looks fabulous. Now, I was told if you're actually in the venue, it's smaller. I mean, that doesn't show up over across the whole, you know, back of the venue, so it's not as impressive as it would be in the pictures.
Well, it is quite dramatic, though. It is sort of a nice focal point for the dais there.
Yeah.
And it's kind of a little bit of a throwback. It's kind of retro, sort of like 30s-ish looking thing with the columns, and I liked it. I thought
it was
great.
Yeah, I think it looked great.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, compared, I believe it was a blank wall. So
I think maybe if you were lucky, the screen was down.
Yes.
It seems like they had like a little stage before.
They did have a little bit of a stage and a podium.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's different. It looks good. They've done some other refurbishments in that room, too. It seemed much more comfortable.
Yeah, brighter, cheerier.
Yeah.
If that's
good.
I
think
word.
That's a far better venue than, of course, the one in Macon. And, of course, when they're free, I mean, you can't be too choosy, but the IBEW venue's, I mean, very, very adequate in Atlanta, whereas the one in Macon that we use sometimes is a bit dank.
Yeah, the one in Macon is a little tight when
yeah.
You get all those Democrats in that room.
Certainly. Well, Juliana, do you have any more thoughts of the weekend's events that would be helpful to us?
I think it was interesting to see somebody come to town who had a very full plate. I mean, I think he was busy from before lunch. They flew in that morning. And just speaking to a couple of his campaign staffers who told me, you know, they were really pleased that, you know, a lot of times they spend most of their day traveling to an event and not really interacting with people. So they were thrilled that they had such a nice crowd at the Legislative Caucus event. As I understood it, he had several standing ovations during that event. I think one of the things that he got a big reaction from the crowd was when he said he was planning to follow the Constitution as president. And that seemed somewhat unusual and startling to the rest of us. I think that may have triggered some of it. And then, you know, to go from Georgia Tech and the Mi Familia, which is something new for the campaign, Hispanic outreach specifically, then to the Globe, then to the IBEW, oh, and not forgetting the varsity event. So that was a really full day, and I think that, you know, in reading what all the campaigns have been up to, the number of visits they're making non-fundraising related, you know, I think I read a number. He's done 340-some-odd non-fundraising things since starting to run for president. That's an amazing amount of, you know, activity for anyone, let alone someone who has to also govern a state. So, and I give it to these candidates. This cannot be easy. And he seems energized by it. You know, he wasn't tired or, you know, looked exhausted. I think I would have been, you know, just about to crawl under a table by then, the end of that day. But he was kind of energized about it, you know, worked the crowd. I think, you know, people sort of enjoyed being able to get up that close. I don't know that they've been able to get that close to some of our other candidates, certainly not Obama when he comes to town. You know, that's just such a mad crush when you see him. So, and I haven't been to any of the Edwards events, unfortunately, so to see what kind of crowd reaction that is. But, you know, it's certainly ramping up. There's no getting around that. You know, people are starting to fall into different camps, and or they've narrowed it down. And I'm not sure what all influences anyone. I think that's interesting. So, but yeah, I mean, there's a lot going on. Cherokee, they were certainly talking about candidates. They don't have any running in Cherokee right now to support, so the conversation is pretty much the top of the ticket.
Yes. Well, I mean, Joe Inman's running for Congress, I believe, there. They do have that in.
Okay. Well,
his name was not on anyone's lips, so. Yes, I was just, I mean, I believe Cherokee, portions of Cherokee are in the that mountain district. The number escapes me, but it's that Blue Ridge mountain area that covers the all of the North Carolina, Tennessee, or most of the Tennessee border area. I believe it dips down. Now, I know part of it's in the district, which Tom Price.
Okay, because when Steve Sinton was running out there, you know, it is. I know that he has like Woodstock, large portions of the Woodstock, which is where the majority of quote unquote Democrats in Cherokee are. They don't tend to go as far up as Canton and some of the other areas. So,
yeah.
You know, the hubs of where the activity for Democrats are is sort of in that lower part of Cherokee County, still more. You know, not as far up. That's an amazingly huge county.
Yeah.
Bless their hearts.
It's so
funny
how there's all these giant counties in Georgia, but there's so many.
Yes.
Fulton County's huge, too.
It is huge. It is huge.
Yes. Well, I mean, Georgia's a bigger state in this part of the country, comparatively.
Yeah.
So that's where that comes from. Yes. Well, Juliana, we thank you for sharing with us about the Richardson event.
Oh, you're...
You've attended, you know, multiple events and what have you.
Well, you know, I'm kind of an addict, so...
Yeah.
Catherine can tell you.
We're addicts together.
When we're not together, we're individually TiVoing C-SPAN and Googling the people we don't know when they come up on the screen. So it's not healthy. We should get lives. We understand. But I might hang on and just see what y'all are talking about.
Certainly, because we've got Rashad Taylor coming later.
Great.
And who knows what else will come up as well.
Okay.
Okay. Well, thank you. And
happy to do it.
Yes. Well, that was good to have somebody that had been to some of the events over the weekend. Of course, you had been to the event in Morrow and covering those areas. But now there are some things that happened on the other side of the aisle that I think we need to talk about. One, which is going to impact Democratic politics because it's going to impact Republican politics so much, and that would be the news that Johnny Isaacson's chief of staff, his right-hand man, has left his chief of staff position and come back to Georgia, and the speculation is that he's come back to Georgia to set up the Isaacson for Governor campaign. Initial thoughts on that, Tim?
Oh, he's plowing the road, David. There's no doubt about it. That is the only reason conceivable that I could pull out of the air that he would be back here. I think if it gets out that this is indeed what is happening, then it's going to really settle things on the Republican side. I think everything will fall into place for them because, let's face it, if Johnny Isaacson runs for governor, that's going to clear the field. And it's going to send people scrambling in different directions, don't you think?
Well, Catherine, your initial thoughts on it?
Well, honestly, I don't pay a lot of attention to the Republicans, to be fair. I guess, you guys know better if you think that that would clear the field and Casey would step back and stay in his current position. I don't know.
Yes.
Well, I have a hard time imagining Sonny Perdue.
What I was trying to say there is that I think it really cut somebody like Casey Cagle off with nowhere to go.
It pushes him back, and I do think, and Catherine, you were alluding to it, and the biggest fallout would be this Sonny Perdue then, whose term would then run up end in 2000, early in 2011, would he then go ahead and run for U.S. Senate, locking basically all the younger Republicans out. I think there's a good chance that would happen. Now,
always been the scuttlebutt that we've heard, is that they're just going to basically switch places.
Yes.
And I wonder if it's because Casey is term limited. I mean, Sonny is term limited, so they don't want to lose him. You know, they want to make sure that he remains in the Republican leadership.
I don't know that there's a lot of folks who are like, oh no, we might lose Sonny. I think it's more or less Sonny doesn't want to lose his own clout. Sonny would be running for Sonny. Not that the Republican Party thinks that they have to have Sonny. I mean, I would think that they would perceive themselves in such a strong position that they could, you know, move ahead with whoever they chose to. But as far as now covering Republicans, I'm going to give you a little theory on that. I coach football, and the last game I went to see at the level I coach, I went to see not a team I coach, but I saw two other teams to scout. So anytime you busy yourself looking at Republicans, all you're doing is scouting the opposition. So there's nothing wrong with that.
Oh, no, there's nothing wrong with it. But like Juliana said, you know, it's like, okay, I have a job and I have a house that I have to maintain, and then I have this, you know, addiction to politics, and sometimes it's hard to look at the other side as carefully as I look at our side.
Oh,
I'm not saying I think it's a shortfall on my part, but it's a fact.
Yes, now certainly going to their events and things like that. Ooh, no time for that. Got too much to do all that. But to notice when somebody's making a major move that would then affect what we do. And the thing is basically, I think our party, no matter what they do, we just have to come up and win and run races and.
Yeah.
What we need to do. And of course, I'm sure there'll be people that are going, oh, no, if they switch seats, then nothing's open, and this is just going to make it so much harder, which one thing I've been saying from the Republican Party for a while now, they seem to be so long in the tooth in a lot of their key seats, governor, two senators, I mean, everybody is like 60 or over. They really could use, while they have the power, if you will, it would serve them well to get younger, but they're just not doing it, and that's going to be to our benefit down the road at some point.
Well, I think that in Georgia we have some of those same problems as far as building a bench. You know, I mean, it might not be as severe as it is on the other side, but I think we do have some of those problems.
Well, it's different things. It's kind of like we're just in flat-out rebuilding mode.
Exactly.
I mean, there's no other way to look at it. But then they're in the mode where they could, go ahead and rebuild while they're strong if they chose to. Will they do that? Hopefully not. Very selfishly say, hopefully not. But I believe another caller has joined us. This could be Rashad Taylor. Let's see, who's joined us?
Hey, David, it's Rashad.
It is Rashad. I know my numbers. I recognize the 404 area code. Rashad, thank you for joining us. Thanks for having me. Yes, well, you've just taken a job with the DPG. I want you to go ahead first, Rashad, give us a little bit about your background for folks that don't know you.
Okay. I just took a job at the Democratic Party of Georgia as political director. Prior to that, I was lobbying with Planned Parenthood of Georgia. And before that, I had my own consulting company where I worked with mostly local, state legislative, county commission, sheriff, candidates running for office. I did a lot of Atlanta City Council and Fulton County, DeKalb County, Cobb County races. I sort of got started in politics working for John Lewis. Came down to Georgia and worked for State Senator Vincent Fort for a few legislative sessions. I left there, worked for Max Cleland for about a year on his finance staff, a year before his election. And when I left the senator's campaign, I left to run Alicia Thomason's first race for state representative, and have just been involved in politics since then. Before I joined Planned Parenthood, I ran the sort of GOTV election efforts for the DCCC in the Augusta-Richmond County area on behalf of John Barrow. So I've been in Georgia politics for a little bit now, and I'm just happy to be at the state party.
Yes. Well, and we're glad to have you there. You're political director, and so people know the title, but tell us, what does that mean?
I know a lot of people say, how are you the political director for a political organization? It makes no sense. But my job sort of cuts across a lot of different areas. It cuts across finance, communication, messaging, cuts across field and all that. I primarily am targeting our legislative races, targeting the races that the state party is going to actively get involved in, actively recruiting candidates, and then we'll be working with those candidates once we get strong candidates in most of our targeted, in all of our targeted races, to hopefully have a victory next November. Outside that, I've just started heading up our delegate selection plan and operation, so I'll be working on that through next year's convention. So that's sort of the bulk of my responsibilities at the state party. It also involves messaging, it also involves fundraising, and all that, but that's the bulk of the responsibilities.
Yes, now is that job considered a deputy director anymore, or is that title kind of gone away?
That title's sort of gone away. Pat Pilar recently left the state party, and she was deputy director. So, we don't have a deputy director. I don't think we're going to hire a deputy director at all. But, Matt Wyatt, who's our executive director, is really capable. And, we're all here just to support him and back him up.
Yes. Well, I know that you'll have targeted races. I want to talk to you about some of those. But one race, obviously, that has to be targeted is the 127th District. Tell us a little about how you see that race for us. And just to let you know, we had Bonnie Burke Gardner on the show as a guest. She was an excellent guest. But tell us how you see that race.
Well, there's an upcoming special election, November 6th. Mac Crawford, who was the incumbent Republican legislator for that seat, took an appointment from Sonny Perdue to serve in the executive branch. And so he left his seat. It's going to be a nonpartisan special election, but they will show your party affiliation on the ballot, and we've been able to recruit a strong candidate for that race and keep it really to one Democrat. There are two Republicans running and one Democrat, and so we feel that our chances are really good. That district, in a regular election year, is probably about 60% Republican, but in a special election, the numbers get a lot closer together, and it's really going to all be about turnout. We have a great candidate down there, Dr. Bonnie Burke Gardner, who's the former superintendent of schools for Pike County, which is one of the main counties in that House district. She's well-known down there. Her family settled in that area in the early 1800s, and they've really been there ever since. She's really well-known throughout the community, been doing a lot of public service stuff prior to deciding to run for office. She was in the teaching and in the administrative area for education for over 20 years. And I think she has a great shot at helping us pick up that seat this November.
Yes. Now, if somebody wanted to get involved, I know you're one of the points of contact. What could somebody do to get involved in that special election?
We are phone banking at the state party every day from 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. They can call our office and we can schedule them to come in. We'd love to get some volunteer support. Our number at the party is 678-278-2008. They can call us and we can get them into the office phone banking. We're also doing canvassing in the 127th. We're taking volunteers from Atlanta down to the 127th to canvass on behalf of Bonnie. And we're doing that, we did that yesterday. We're doing that on the 13th. And we're doing it on the 27th of this month. Those are all Saturdays. Jane Keene is actually going with us on the 13th. And we'd love to have more volunteers to do that. Or people can, if they can't phone back or door knock, they can always send a contribution. And I can give you Bonnie's address. If you guys call the state office, we can give you the address where you can mail a check. She needs your help. She needs your support. She's a great candidate. and I think that we really have a shot at picking up this seat. The House leadership, DuBose Porter, Calvin Smyre, and everyone in the leadership has really stepped up and supported Bonnie. They've sent checks. They've been given advice. They're campaigning for. They're going to churches for. So I think, you know, we've really rallied around this seat. We're going to give it all we've got, and hopefully we'll come out with a victory.
Yes, and also in addition to sending checks, is there going to be a way people can online fundraise in the future?
We are set that up, thanks to you, David. And so there will be a way to set that up. And, you know, if you, I don't think we have it set up completely yet, but it should be within the next, you know, day or two. People can call the state party office, and we can give them the website where they can go just to contribute online.
Are people, it may be linked on the state party's website. I would assume
right.
within a, Martin will probably have that up within a day or two once
I think we will.
All the particulars get sorted out. Well, that'll be good. So we can do that. Now, of course, the 127th is going to be a good chance for us to, you know, see what kind of progress we've made. But
right.
now, that obviously would not be the most targeted district in the state. But speaking of the state house for the big election in 2008, what are some races we're looking at?
One of our number one races is right up there with you, David, in Rome, Georgia. Katie Dempsey won by less than, I think, 200 votes in 2006. And we're going to go after that seat again. We think it's a great chance to pick up a seat. And so that's probably our number one targeted race throughout this state. We also have several others throughout the state that we're targeting, but that's our number one race, Rome, Georgia.
Yes. I believe some in the metro area that may be some demographic shifts. Are there any in that category that we may can pick up?
We have some in the metro Atlanta area. One in particular that everyone is probably familiar with is a seat that used to be held by a Democrat, but now it's held by a Republican, and that's the 80th House District with Mike Jacobs. We think we can pick that seat up. We have a lot of strong candidates who are interested in running for that seat. And we think that we're going to have a great shot at picking that up. And that's a North DeKalb. We have a few other seats in Metro Atlanta that we'll be targeting. Of course, Jill Chambers, who's right next door to Mike Jacobs in the 81st House District in North DeKalb, will be a target as well.
Yes, and wasn't there a seat in South Gwinnett and most of Rockdale County that George Wilson ran, and he was pretty underfunded? Yet he still got within, I believe, you know, hundreds of votes, not thousands of votes.
Yeah, less, another race where, you know, less than 300 votes.
Yes.
Mumford is his name, the Republican incumbent, won that seat by less than 300 votes. And so, you know, it was with a candidate who, like you said, was severely underfunded. And so that's also our a target for us. It stretches from Rockdale County up to Gwinnett County.
And George Wilson, I believe, never stopped campaigning, but are there other candidates in that seat, or is it still?
There have been other candidates who've talked about it. I think George has indicated he intends to run again, but that is a target for us as well.
Yes, and that was the state house. What about the state senate? What's it looking like there?
Well, the good news about our legislative seats, David, is that Democrats have very few competitive seats. Most of the competitive seats, of course, are held by Republicans, and so that's really good for us. Now, that's of course, a nice way of saying we've sort of hit the bottom, you know, in the state legislature. Well, we're holding on to all the seats that are Democratic, but we have far fewer seats to defend than Republicans. And in the state senate, that's no different. We have really one seat that's competitive on the Democratic side. That's State Senate District 23 with J.B. Powell, who is a very great state senator, a strong candidate. And I think he's going to be able to hold on to that Augusta area state senate seat. But it is going to be competitive for us. We expect Republicans to go after us again with a lot of money like they did back in 2006, but again, I think JB is going to be strong for that seat. We have other state senate seats that we're really targeting. Johnny Grant at the Milledgeville area is going to be a targeted state senate seat for us, as well as Nancy Schaefer in the 50th State Senate seat, or State Senate district, up in North Georgia, Habersham County, all the way up in Northeast Georgia is also going to be a target, but I think Johnny Grant will probably be target number one.
Yes. Now, Rashad, you be careful. If the Scientologists hear about you getting after Nancy Schaefer, you might be on their targeted list. You can't have that. Well, Tim and Catherine, I don't want to hog Rashad. If y'all have a question, jump on in with your question.
Well, I have a couple. Mr. Taylor, we've been talking about state House and state Senate races, but I would like to talk about a subject that we've been broaching on the kudzu vine for the last few weeks, and that's about how it looks in Congress. I was wondering if you had an opinion on which current GOP congressman in Georgia is the most vulnerable to defeat by the Democrats and why.
I think clearly the 10th states, the 10th congressional district is probably the Republican-held seat that Democrats most likely will be able to pick up, if any seat. It's currently been held by Congressman Brown, who won an upset special election. And I'll note that he won, and he says he won with a coalition of Democrats and Republicans to beat Jim Whitehead from that, take that state, take that congressional seat. But I think he's a very weak candidate who sort of fell into his congressional victory. And I think that we're going to have a great shot at taking back that seat. There's a great guy, Bobby Saxton, who is already running for that seat. He's an Iraqi war veteran, a young businessman up in that area who has, I think, started running a great campaign. I think he's gonna be a great candidate for that seat. But I think that's probably the seat where we will most likely be able to see a victory on the congressional level.
Oh, and
I might write off. Go ahead.
I was just going to add that I might also add that we've had Bobby Saxton on our show as well.
Okay.
He does sound like an excellent candidate.
Yeah.
The other question that I had was about the presidential election. Now, next year, when the party settles on their nominee, I was wondering, what role does the state party then take in the presidential campaign, or is that exclusively run in Georgia by the national campaign?
A lot of that depends on the nominee, but I'll tell you, most of the presidential candidates, especially all of the quote-unquote front-runners, Clinton, Obama, Edwards, and Richardson have signed agreement with the state parties saying that they will sit down with the chairs of all of the state parties and talk about how we will be able to work together towards a victory in November on the presidential level. I think that that is sort of unprecedented sort of collaboration that we're trying to do between the presidential candidates and the state parties, especially state parties that are not considered, you know, competitive states. You know, they're not just sitting out with Florida and Ohio and Pennsylvania, but they've, you know, committed this to nearly every state in the nation, and I think that that's a good first step. And so I think once we do that, once we have a nominee and they sit down with our state chairs, we can figure out how the state parties will work with the presidential candidates. I think they're reaching out saying that they want to work with us. We just need to figure out how we'll be able to work that relationship. I think, you know, just like Howard Dean has a 50-state strategy that really appears to be working, and I think was sort of the backbone to the Democratic takeover in Congress, you know, the presidential candidates should have a 50-state strategy as well. I mean, you cannot continue to cede areas of this country to the Republican Party. You cannot continue to ignore large sections of this country because you don't think you're going to win over their vote, because as you continue to do that, the Republicans continue to get stronger in those areas and you continue to get weaker, you know. And so I think I think we'll see the presidential candidates really try to work with us next year.
All right. Thank you. Catherine?
I have a quick question. It's been really great to hear all about these things, Rashad. It's great to hear about all the things that the party's doing. And you mentioned in your introduction that you also have a role in communications.
Sure.
And I think it would be really helpful if all the Democrats in Georgia, you know, I'm sure a lot of them listen to Kudzubine,
sure,
but not everybody does. And I think it would be really helpful if someone from the party would have regular communication, at least with the state committee members, so that those of us who are on the state committee could pass along all this great activity, all this proof of performance to other Democrats, so that, because, I mean, there's still people in this state, friends of mine, who aren't active in the party, who believe that the party is dead.
Sure.
And I think it would be really helpful if we could, for the party in general, and for your role, as well as for everybody else's role at the party, if we just heard more about it.
Right. Yeah, I've only been there, I started at the beginning of July.
Oh, I know, I'm not,
but,
this isn't meant to be a criticism. It's
I agree that we need to, I think, publicize more sort of the progress that we're making and the small victories that we're attaining.
Well, and also, if you did that, you might get people interested in, you know, maybe they're willing to drive down to Pike County on the weekend and do some canvassing or come down to the headquarters and make some phone calls.
Right.
Because I think there are people that want to do things, but they feel like there's nothing for them to do. But obviously,
there's plenty to do.
Yeah, I know. I know that.
Yeah.
But I do think that would be a great addition to all the. I mean, I know it's more work, but there are volunteers that are willing to help you if you you have a communications team and an IT team and a finance team that might be willing to help as well. So
right.
I'd like to see, as a state committee member and as a contributor to the party, I would love to see more information being circulated about what's been happening.
Right. Well, that's a great point. I know that we do a few newsletters, some of them targeted to specific groups. I know that Jay usually does regular updates with the executive committee via newsletters. And I think that we do a New Day in Georgia as our general newsletter. but yeah, we do need to publicize more our progress and our victories. It's one thing that Jay is committed to is sort of like Howard Dean's 50-state strategy is 159-county strategy here in Georgia. And I think the first step is sort of making sure we have county parties in all of these, in every one of our counties. And I think that one of the reasons that she's trying to do that is so that we could, because the county party is closer to, you know, the people on the ground.
Absolutely.
So to sort of filter this through the county parties, we encourage people all the time to get involved with their county party. You know, the county parties need help, just like the state party needs help. So, you know, we're going to do a lot of stuff to try to strengthen our county parties and have them be the sort of the engines that really run, I think, a lot of the operations at the state party. But part of the problem with that is our county parties for a long time have been ignored. So you have county parties that are non-existent, or you have county parties that, you know, have been operating sort of independently of the state party. And so just, you know, sort of getting us all back on the same page and getting those county parties started that were not existing has been a task. But I think that, you know, every day we have new county parties starting up. I think we had a new county party in, I think it was Towns County, but don't quote me on that, where Ted Terry, who's our Northeast field director, field organizer, Towns County had their first meeting for potential, I guess, you know, people who want to start a county party. And Ted had us at the state party have our volunteers calling, you know, people who voted Democratic primaries in Towns County. And when they had their interest meeting, they had almost 100 people
show up. Oh, my goodness,
that's
fantastic.
Right, and if you know anything about that area of the state, that's great. I mean, you know, some county parties like Fulton and DeKalb and Cobb probably have 100 people at their meetings generally, but for Towns County, that was amazing. And so it's that type of, you know, all of the work that we're going to have to do.
See, that's great news. We love to hear that.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, so we have to get that out. We have to get the word out about the progress. And it's going to be a long process. We're not going to be able to turn this party around in this state around overnight, but you know, I think we're at the beginnings of really seeing a lot of progress and success.
And I also want to thank you for coming to the Fulton County Democrats. I think that was like the first week you were here.
Yeah, it was.
We really did appreciate having you there.
Not a problem. I've been to a lot of county parties. I was at DeKalb County's meeting. I think it was on Wednesday or Thursday. I've been to Clayton. I've been to most of the Metro Atlanta parties. I'll be in Cobb pretty soon, and you know, just branching out as well. I mean, I told Jane when I took on this role that I'm not gonna recruit candidates like we've been doing in the past. I'm not just looking for deep pockets who can self fund. I'm not just looking for, you know, people who are well connected. I'm looking for people who, you know, are the school teachers and the principals and the superintendents, people who are on the ground, who are well known, who've been doing public service in their communities, and who people, you know, generally like and respect and who would vote for. And I don't know who these people are in a lot of these parts of the state, so I have to go to the county parties and go to the local, you know, the local folks down there and find out who these people are that we can recruit to run for these offices. And so, you know, strengthening these county parties is beneficial, you know, for me as well, and we're trying to recruit candidates.
Yeah. Well, Rashad, I did have a final question I kind of wanted to throw to you. It's about the U.S. Senate race. Now, obviously, you know, it's not appropriate for you to say, oh, this person's doing well and this person's not, or this is what we think as far as candidates. But when that gets set, what's the Democratic Party's plan in incorporating the top of the ticket, really for our state, the U.S. Senate race, into the total picture?
Well, I'll say a couple of things about the Senate race. You know, we definitely want to make sure that, you know, I think our U.S. Senate candidate, whoever the nominee is, we're all going to have to rally around and make sure they're as strong as they can be, because I think we saw with last year's elections that when you have a candidate at the top of the ticket, that will affect every race down ballot. You know, our gubernatorial candidate last year didn't do as well as, you know, a lot of people had hoped or expected, and that really affected every other race throughout this state. and so, you know, if we have any chance of picking up any legislative or congressional seats on that U.S. Senate seat next year, we're going to have a strong candidate, and we are, as a party, I think, going to have to get behind whoever that candidate is. With that said, you know, the state party is committed to you know, actively going after that race. I think Saxby Chambliss is a very weak candidate. I think he has an atrocious record that we're going to highlight, that we've already started to highlight, and attack him on. And you know, we're going to be behind our U.S. Senate candidate 100%. We're going to give them the support that they need to hopefully be victorious next November. I mean, we're going to work hard to try and defeat Saxby Chambliss.
Yes. Well, Rashad, we've enjoyed you coming on the show, and hope you'll come back again at times when we need you to tell us about targeted races or events that we need to get out to and learning more about your job, because I take it your job's going to be one that the people are going to interact with and figuring out how to do the grassroots campaigning.
Right. It'll be, you know, us and our field team and really all of us, our communications team as well as our finance team. We're all, you know, here to, you know, make sure everybody sort of has what they need in order to be successful. But I want to thank you for having me on. I think this is a great show. I listen a lot. Sometimes I don't catch it on Sunday evenings, but I go online and listen to it when I get to the office. And I really, you know, think you're doing a great thing with this show. Maybe we should just send out a link to all of our state committee members for this show. Who can listen, you know, every Sunday. I mean, this is going to be our
we're
own.
We're not going to stop you from doing that.
I'll have to check with Mike Jablonski, our legal counsel, to see if we can do that. But I think, you know, I mean, you have great people on this show. You talk about a lot of great issues, and you try to inform people about what's going on. I think that's a great thing.
That's what we try to be here for.
Well, thank you so much for all you do for the party.
Oh, well, you're welcome, and thank you, Rashad.
Okay.
Okay. Well, good to have Rashad on. Been working with Rashad on different campaigns for a long time. I believe I first met him when he was working for Max Cleland. And I think a lot of Rashad, very sharp person. I'm glad we got him down there at Spring Street. Well, I know our show's coming to a close soon, so we definitely have to get the outrage of the weekend. But there's one more topic that I wanted to cover before we got to the outrage. And that was we've talked a lot about Jim Marshall and his congressional seat and what he's doing. Well, he's apparently gotten this week. He has gotten Jack Ellis, the current mayor of Macon, running, and Robert Novak, who is spelled different than the man on TV. It's spelled N-O-W-A-K, running. And a little disclosure I think we need to do is Bernita is actually working for Robert Novak's campaign. But it's they're both going to run for against Jim Marshall. What do y'all make of this?
Well, when I first heard, should I go? Sorry.
Yes, go ahead. Go ahead.
When I first met Robert Novak, I don't know the Mr. Ellis. I thought, oh, you know, that sounds like a pretty tough race, and I think it is. But I think with this recent vote on S-CHIP, I think people are going to be a little bit more receptive to a change. But I think it's still going to be a tough race, especially with three candidates, with, you know, three people running. But Novak is a nice guy. He's a teacher. I think he recently retired from teaching. Seems very capable, very interested in, you know, leadership and serving and all the things I think we look for especially in a new candidate. So, I mean, I think he's a good guy. I don't know anything about Mr. Ellis.
Yes. Well, Tim, what's your initial thoughts?
Well, you know, what I've been thinking when I've been hearing about these opponents coming forward in the Democratic Party, I was wondering if these represent no more than thorns in the side of Representative Marshall, or is it something deeper and more fundamental? Is some change actually happening in that district? Are some people getting fed up with some votes that Representative Marshall is making, some positions he's taking, and are they ready to do something about it?
Yes, and I kind of, gosh, part of me says, hey, maybe if these candidates jumped forward about 10 days ago, maybe, you know, Jim Marshall would have been a little more receptive to voting, you know, standing with the Democrats on children's health care. I believe there's still another vote to override the veto. Maybe this will kind of, you know, either shake some sense into them, scare them straight, whatever you want to say. But because I really don't think that competitive primaries for seats we already hold is really the best way for us to go, in theory. But if something good can come out of it, I'm all for it.
Well, I think that I can only hope that it doesn't get that it's not nasty. And that maybe by having a challenger, Representative Marshall will look back to his Democratic roots and be more respective of the values that of the people who elected him. Because I don't think he has been of late. I mean, that's what Mr. Novak has told me, that he has talked to a lot of people in the area. And they're not happy with the way that he's been voting on the war and now this S-CHIP. And so I think, you know, maybe it'll, like you said, shake some sense into him.
Yes, I mean, that's, I guess, the upside of it, if that could happen. Tim, I guess we're ready for the outrage of the week.
Okay, David. Glenn Richardson and his right-wing supporters continue to plod on in their quixotic quest. The House Speaker has traveled all over the state of Georgia hawking his little sales tax scheme. It's pretty much reminiscent of old-time carnival barkers at sideshows. They promoted fakes and fabrications just like he does now. Even though some polling has been done on this, it's not really known at this time how the average Georgian even feels about this sales and services tax thing. What I hope is that the public will take some notice as to who the Georgia Budget and Policy Institute is lining up to oppose it. We have, for instance, ARP, who warns that the Richardson tax will hurt senior citizens on fixed incomes. We have the Georgia Association of Educators, who warns that local schools may have budget shortfalls because this tax is nothing more than an unstable source of revenue. We have the Georgia School Boards Association, who warns that local control of school systems will be forfeited because almost all of the funding will come from the state. We have the CURB, that's the Georgia Coalition for a Responsible Budget. They represent 24 service, civic, and health organizations in Georgia, and they warn that this sales and services tax will strain already tight local government budgets to the breaking point. I might add here that local government officials of both parties across Georgia oppose this Republican Richardson tax plan almost to a person. Let there be no doubt what is at stake here. We're talking about a 6.5% statewide sales tax on just about everything you would buy. We are also talking about a tax imposed every time you visit your family doctor, your dentist, your hairdresser, your vet, or your plumber. You will be taxed for every service you are provided by anyone. This tax will hurt the elderly, the working poor, and the school children of Georgia. But it will help the wealthiest citizens. That's what Republican tax proposals almost always do. For years, Republicans like Richardson talked their tax nonsense. But now they are in power in Georgia. And if they were to present one of these plans with a united front, they would be, frankly, difficult to stop. I, for one, find it extremely unsettling to know that the only people standing between Glenn Richardson and my checkbook right now are Sonny Perdue and Casey Cagle. I want to place my hope in someone else. And that is all of you out there, the listeners, the people of Georgia. Get the word out about all of this, folks. Contact all of your elected officials, because the best way to stop this Republican outrage is for the people of Georgia to do it. David?
Yes, I think you're right. They're having these little town hall tours. Hopefully people will see through it. And I know a lot of the elected officials, a lot of the nonpartisan elected officials at the municipal levels are coming out against this. And hopefully the inertia will happen to where it'll push this back. And even if you know, Casey Cagle or Sonny Perdue have to be the conduit, hopefully they can stop Glenn Richardson, because they're the lesser of three evils in this case.
Amen.
Yes. Well, Catherine, thanks again for joining us, and you're welcome anytime.
Thank you very much.
As the holiday season comes upon us, more in the year, I'm sure we'll have days where some of us can't be here. We'll always need other voices and other opinions to keep it fresh.
Well, thank you very much for having me. It was a joy. It was a pleasure.
Okay, well, just
thanks, Tim.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, enjoyed it.
Yes, check the blogs regularly to see what topics we'll be discussing on next week's Kudzu Vine.
Okay.
Thank you.
Good night,
David. Bye. Good night.